Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert Rick Graham. Rick, I'm in a new place. I just moved in with my girlfriend, so that's why I've got a new background here. No, I'm not in the kitchen. I'm in the living room, but that's what sort of what apartments look like, huh?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I see it. You got the living room. I've got a little bit of a get a window finally. We get to see some nice, you know, sunshine out there. Dude, yeah.
This is a door to the balcony.
There you go. That's nice. Yeah. So yeah, this is a nice little setup you got here.
I'm excited to record here. Don't have to worry about bothering my family and stuff as I was living with my mom before. So really it's mostly about the doing the late night first pitch podcast at like 2 a.m, not trying to wake up the whole house. So there's enough separation between this location and the bedroom to
just don't wake up your girlfriend. Yeah.
right. Yeah. I think she'll be okay. But we are here to talk relief pitchers as always. There's plenty of news, as has been the case throughout the whole season here. And we'll also talk about some risers and fallers on Rick's closer ranks. And then we'll focus on some early season save plus hold leaders. And that will allow us to sort of reset our expectations on the usage patterns for some bullpens and for particular relief pitchers. So let's start it off, as always, with the news and notes, jumping right into the transactions. And this was the big one, and probably one that we should have seen coming from a mile away. Jordan Romano was designated for assignment and released by the Angels. Sean Anderson joined him on the DFA wire, and the Angels made a series of moves to replace Romano, selecting the contract of Joey Lucchesi and recalling Jose Fermin from the minors. But Romano started off really strong. The last few appearances have been terrible. I think he had something like a 70 ERA over like 4 appearances or something. It was just not good. It was surprising to see him just go straight off the roster. I thought maybe they would, you know, option him to the minors or something, but they just completely gave up on him.
Yeah, I almost wonder, I mean, I don't know if there's been anything. I wonder if there was something else that happened. I don't know. You know, it is kind of weird. Because if you look at it from a numbers standpoint, I mean, like, just like Drew Pomeranz isn't pitching that much better right now.
No, terrible.
I guess if you're looking at it from a stuff perspective, Pomeranz looks better, and yeah, like clearly Romano is not the same guy he used to be. The velo is down, command was not great. Is the likelihood of him turning things around probably not great at this point? But yeah, it's so early. I mean, it is kind of surprising how quickly they cut bait. I bet you he gets picked up relatively soon. I mean, he shouldn't be in the mix to close out games, but someone probably should take, you know, if you have a spot in your bullpen, just to like have him, you know, pitch the 6th inning for now, see what happens, see if you can maybe figure things out. If the velo doesn't come back, that's one thing. But I think, you know, as long as if he can just command his fastball better, he might be okay. I don't know. It, as bad as things were, I didn't think like he's completely cooked. It seems like he is for sure. I get that. Right. But I don't know. I feel like a team or like the Twins. Like, I mean, what else you got going on over there in that bullpen, Minnesota?
Luis Garcia.
Yeah. You getting called? I mean, like what? I mean, yeah. So. I don't know. I think Romano should get another chance. I'm not like, I don't think he's going to run away with a closer job anywhere, but
yeah,
he's not completely like the fastball still has good shape. Curveball still good. It's just, yeah, the command's an issue for sure.
He had a series of 6 outings to open the season where he looked really strong. He wasn't allowing any runs. And while it was precarious given the lack of control, it's still like he can still get major league batters out. And it doesn't necessarily, as you mentioned, have to be in a closer role. So with the Angels closer role now open, I think a lot of people are going to be turning their attention to Kirby Yates, who's returning from the injured list shortly. He's made 3 rehab appearances. However, I'm not in. He's allowed 7 runs. While he does have a 5-1 strikeout to walk ratio, he's clearly not been doing a good job at getting batters out. That's 7 hits and 7 runs from Kirby Yates during his rehab assignment. So he's probably not the savior. And you mentioned Drew Pomeranz, who appeared to be the next guy up after Romano, but he started struggling immediately after the club DFA'd Romano. immediately blowing back-to-back saves, and he now has an 8.74 ERA. So I think, as Roster Resource would suggest, I would agree it's either Sam Bachman or Chase Silseth, and they're both sort of carbon copies of each other in terms of their strikeout-to-walk abilities. They're both high whiff arms with zero control. Both of these guys have 16% walk rates with swinging strike rates north of 14%. So if you had to choose between Bachman and Silseth, who are you putting your money on?
By the way, like Kirby Yates, his velo's down like 2 to 3 miles per hour in those appearances too. So that's just another thing to, I don't think that's going to be, he's not the savior. I've had some interest in Bachman this year at times. I mean, stuff wise, I think he is easily the better option between him and Silseth. I just don't, the command is just so bad more often than not. But it is with Silseth as well. Silseth's a splitter guy, heavy splitter guy. So that walk rate's probably not too, I mean, he might be able to fix it a little bit, but he's going to be volatile. Bachman's just, you know, sinker slider. He throws 99, 100, but like the slider and the sinker, he just does not, he can't command it more often than not. So, I have some interest in Bachman if he is able to find some sort of consistency with his command, but I think this is kind of turning into like the Twins, or I guess the A's might have found someone, but the Twins, at least, like, this seems like a situation just to like kind of avoid, at least until someone can, you know, show some sort of consistency. Like, even Ryan Zephyrjohn, maybe he can find his way back into the mix there. But again, consistency with him is like, he'll have 3 really good outings and then like allow 5 earned runs and walk 4 guys. So yeah, it's there's some interesting arms there still. And I mean, Ben Joyce will be back eventually, but just, I want to be interested in Bachman, but I think I'm just kind of out on this whole bullpen. And I don't see Silseth being an answer either. I know that's who the beat writers have been talking about. So there obviously is some internal, you know, within the Angels organization, they seem to like Silseth, but I don't exactly see it.
I mean, I think it's probably because he does throw more strikes than Bachman. So while they both have the same walk rate, it's a 6% difference in overall strike rate. So Silseth clearly has better command of his other pitches, but he is volatile because he throws a splitter more than any other pitch. So I also think that because Bachman is a sinker slider guy, he's going to be mostly effective against righties, whereas Silseth with the splitter is going to have a better time against lefties with the four seamer as well. So maybe he's a better guy to be a traditional closer where he can face both righties and lefties, and Bachman's somebody you want in a righty heavy portion of the lineup. So I think I'd put my money on Silseth for now, but as you mentioned, it's precarious because of the lack of command from both of these guys. So maybe sit back and watch, but if you're desperate and trying to take a lottery ticket out, then I think I'd put it on Silseth, but either one is fine for now. Let's move on to our IL activation, starting with Andrew Kittredge, who has missed the entire season with shoulder inflammation. He was activated from the 15-day IL by the Orioles, who then optioned Jose Espada to the minors in a corresponding move. The Orioles bullpen looks a lot different than it did when Kittredge first landed on the IL. There's tons of options now. And if we want to talk about more options, Keegan Aiken was also activated from the 15-day IL after missing time with a groin strain, and Cameron Foster was optioned to the minor. So they've got a full bullpen right now. Like, everybody is healthy except for Dietrich Enns, and that means Rico Garcia, Anthony Nunez, Andrew Kittredge, Keegan Aiken, Yennier Cano, Grant Wolfram. All of these guys have been getting holds all year, and it's honestly a dominant bullpen with Ryan Helsley at the top. So how do you think Kittredge and Aiken factor in here with the emergence of guys like Garcia, Nunez, and Wolfram?
Yeah, I think Aiken is, I mean, his first outing was not great. I think he's more, I think actually both of them right now are just more so depth pieces that kind of need to work their way back into being any sort of high leverage reliever. I think Kittredge got a hold today, the way Nunez and Garcia are pitching right now, it's going to be really hard to overtake one of them. And I think Wolfram's been so good as their lefty. I mean, Aiken probably wasn't even, I mean, you got a Dietrich Enns is probably coming back soon too. So that's another name. So, I mean, I feel like in that pecking order of lefties, Wolfram's been the best. And after that, I don't know, Enns or Aiken, I probably would rather Enns at this point. So, yeah, there's going to be, once they get him back and Dietrich Enns, there's going to be a tough roster move because who even has, I mean, Nunez has options, obviously, but you can't send him down right now the way he's pitching. So
they'll probably just DFA Keegan Aiken.
I wonder if that's the case. Yeah, I mean, that's probably, unless he, like, you know, has a really good week or two here, that's probably the case. So, yeah, I think Aiken's kind of out of the situation here. But yeah, Kittredge probably, he had a hold tonight. He'll probably be around the high leverage group. You know, maybe he's the sixth inning, seventh inning guy, not the eighth inning guy like we had expected, but that's, he'll still get holds, I think.
All right, let's move over to the Astros bullpen, which could use reinforcements as it seems like everybody they're trying in the late innings is struggling. They got Bennett Sousa back from the IL after he missed time with an oblique strain. Colton Gordon was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. Sousa was great for the Astros last year with a 2.84 ERA and a near 30% strikeout rate. He is a lefty, which it's not ideal for this bullpen that's looking for right-handed options with Brian Abreu struggling and now Eniel De Los Santos has an ERA over six. So not the ideal guy that they wanted to come back. They still want Hader back, but how do you think Bennett Sousa factors into this struggling Astros bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously opportunity even as a lefty. Brian King, that is the other lefty there who's also been struggling lately. They, for whatever reason, don't seem like fully sold on Steven Okert also. So I think there's a chance for Sousa, if he pitches well, to move right up into a setup or co-closer situation. I mean, I don't even know who the closer really is here at this point. But that first outing from Sousa was not great. I don't know. He walked like four or five guys, only got one out. So, probably just, you know, first game back nerves or whatever, but something to keep an eye on with him because, yeah, they desperately need any and all help they can get in that bullpen right now. It doesn't matter left or right. Just get someone who can get outs, I think, is what they'll take. So got to get Sousa back to where he was last year because he was super underrated last year and he didn't get a ton of holds. I know Brian King got most of the holds from the left side, but Sousa was the better pitcher of the two. And it wasn't even that close, you know.
Next, we'll move to the Phillies, who activated Jonathan Bolin from the 15-day IL after he missed time with a groin strain. Nolan Hoffman was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. And yeah, this one's sort of under the radar. I don't think a lot of people have eyes on Jonathan Bolin. Zero saves plus holds so far this year. Right, they should. He was interesting after being acquired via trade from the Royals over the offseason. And I think the Phillies could turn him into a pretty legit high leverage reliever. We'll see how things work out, but with Yoan Duran on the IL, Jose Alvarado not looking great, Orion Kirkring not really dominating at all, Jonathan Bolin could quickly climb into the high leverage situations for the Phillies.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he, even with when Kirkring was out to start the year, Bolin was kind of that secondary setup guy behind Alvarado and Kirkring, or Alvarado and Keller. Yeah. So, yeah, it does sound like Duran might be back this week or next week at the latest. So that will that pretty much has the bullpen full. And I don't know where Bolin figures in. But, I mean, yeah, Kirkering hasn't been great. He's not getting swing and miss anymore. I mean, his sweeper does not get any swing and miss. I think hitters are just sitting on that and only that. And it's like his fastball gets swings and misses, but that's, I don't know. He hasn't been as effective that way. And Alvarado has been, you know, up and down, hit or miss this year. So, yeah, I think, you know, Bolin stuff-wise, I mean, he's right up there with almost anyone in that bullpen. It's just command and consistency with him. And, yeah, he still throws like four or five pitches, and I wonder if he just needs to, like, tighten that arsenal down and, you know, if you're going to be a reliever, just, you know, find your three best pitches and just, you know, throw those 99% of the time.
Right, right. I would have to agree there. And our last couple of transactions involve some transferrings to the 60-day IL. As expected, Edwin Uceta was transferred to the 60-day IL. I don't think we're going to see him until June or something. Yeah. He can't return until late May for the time being. And the Blue Jays transferred Jimmy Garcia to the 60-day IL. He's recovering from elbow surgery. I thought that we might see him earlier this season, but that doesn't appear to be the case. Blue Jays don't necessarily need him. They have a pretty deep bullpen. I would play it safe too if you want Garcia ready for the postseason. So Garcia probably won't be in the majors until June as well.
Yeah, it sounds like he's still progressing fairly like as normal. I think he's a similar timeline as like Josh Hader, where he's throwing BP sessions. He's facing live hitters, probably going to start a rehab in the next week or so. And yeah, probably should be back by late May, early June, the latest.
All right. Next, we'll talk about some injuries. As Caleb Thielbar was placed on the 15-day IL with a hamstring strain, the Cubs just cannot catch a break. Literally, everybody in that bullpen continues to get injured, but they had some reinforcements come back. In a corresponding move to Thielbar landing on the IL, Vince Velasquez was selected from the minors, and then he was DFA'd to make room for Yaxel Rios. And then Riley Martin was placed on the 15-day IL with a flexor strain. He's expected to miss 8 weeks. At that point, I was like, man, there is some sort of hex on the Cubs right now. They had like six relievers on the injured list, but they did get one back. Charlie Barnes was optioned to the minors to make room for Phil Maton, who was activated from the 15-day IL after missing a couple weeks with knee tendonitis. And after Thielbar went down, it was like, who's going to close here? There was really nobody. They still don't want to allow Ben Brown to pitch a singular inning. So there was really nobody to land on. I saw people picking up Corbin Martin, which
he got the first
crazy.
He got the first save and like,
yeah,
I don't know.
But now Phil Maton's back and he's a very clear option to close for this team. But he did struggle in his first taste of the majors back from the IL.
Yeah, it was a little bit, I watched that one. It was a little bit of a bad luck. But I'd still a little, I mean, he's not a big velocity guy, Maton, but it's still down in like 88, where I know he's usually like 90, and like the 2 miles per hour can be a difference. So I don't know, how much that's going to affect him. But I think ultimately Phil Maton will be fine. I don't think they ideally want him in the closer role, but here we are with everyone else being hurt. So hopefully Palencia is back by next week or next weekend, maybe. So this isn't a long-term concern. Maton will definitely get some save chances, I would imagine. Maybe still Corbin Martin. I know Riley Martin's a tough loss because he actually was pitching pretty well for them. Like losing him and Thielbar, they're two top lefties essentially, definitely hurts. So, and they'll piece it. I mean, even like Yaxel Rios looked kind of interesting in his first game back. Corbin Martin's curveball is really good. Like they've got some pretty good depth there, surprisingly. For all these injuries, they're still not, the bullpen hasn't been terrible. So, we'll see how they work things out. But it sounds like, Maton's back. Harvey's working his way back. Palencia should be back not that long. So, they'll get, and hopefully Thielbar's hamstring isn't too bad. So I think they should get everyone back in the next couple weeks, and hopefully then they stay healthy.
Yeah, everyone but Martin, who's probably going to be out for like 2.5 months, which is rough because he was looking like he was having some breakout season, 32% strikeout rate, maybe not supported by the whiffs, but he was looking pretty interesting as a sort of out of nowhere breakout for the Cubs. Next, we had another closer hit the IL. What a surprise. Clayton Beter hit the 15-day IL with forearm soreness. He did come back with a clean MRI, but he hadn't pitched for a few days before this IL placement. They were able to backdate it a couple of days, but this doesn't look very promising for Beter. I'd expect him to be probably shut down for a little bit and then come back in 2 to 3 weeks or so. Paxton Schultz and Andre Granillo were recalled from the minors in a corresponding move, and Schultz ended up getting the first save without Clayton Beter. But I feel like it's pretty obvious that Gus Varland should be the first guy up, as he had as many saves as Beter had prior to the injury.
Yeah, the Schultz save came in the 10th inning, where they actually used Varland in the 8th and Cody, or not Cody, why?
Richard Lovelady.
Mr. Lovelady in the 9th inning, which seems, I mean, even with Beter, they're still going to play matchups, and that was, you know, Lovelady was getting lefties in the 9th. So Varland should be the favorite for saves as long as there's not two lefties due up in the 9th. Which, if that's the case, then it's going to go to Ciano Perez or Richard Lovelady, who Lovelady's actually looked decent for them since coming over from the Mets. But that's not someone, neither him or Perez are really too exciting. So, yeah, if you're going to take a chance here, it's Gus Varland. It's just frustrating, the usage with him, both how they're using him and his pitch usage sometimes. But I don't know. I like Varland a lot. I was liking him better than Beter before he went on the IL, but they still seem to trust Beter in the 9th inning. So there's something about Varland, and I don't know. It's just this is another bullpen that's going to be very frustrating. You're not going to get the same guy in the 9th inning every time. And as long as you know that, then, like, yeah, you can roster Varland as your 3rd or 4th reliever. Just know he's not going to always pitch the 9th. And it's not always going to be a clean outing from him either.
Right. He's more of a deep league target at this point. Next, we go to the Guardians, who placed Sean Armstrong on the 15-day IL with a groin strain. Colin Holderman was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. Armstrong has been sort of integral to this bullpen in the late innings as one of their high leverage righties behind closer Cade Smith. But with Hunter Gaddis back, his opportunities were fading, and I think he's probably not as good as he was last year. The walks are getting concerning at 15% right now.
Yeah, he is not. He was not pitching well, and just, you know, once Gaddis came back, fell out of favor there with how, you know, Sobrowski's been awesome. And even, you know, behind Gaddis and Sobrowski and Cade Smith, there's, you know, Connor Brogdon or Matt Festa. So, yeah, it's not very, they don't have a much of a need for him in high leverage spots right now. Hopefully he can get, you know, healthy and recover that, you know, kind of a bounce back year he had last year that kind of came from out of nowhere. But yeah, he was kind of fading off the holds radar anyway at this point.
That's Sean Armstrong to the IL. And lastly, we have a last minute IL placement as Pete Fairbanks landed on the 15-day IL with nerve irritation. He walked 3 batters in a blown save last night, just looked all out of whack. I think Rick even tweeted that he had not been walking anybody all year, and it just sort of all fell apart here. So I think it's obviously concerning, but I think it's a little bit of a relief to see that the control going away is due to an injury and not just him struggling.
Yeah, I don't know if that's like a relation to the Raynaud syndrome he's dealt with.
Makes sense.
It wasn't that cold in LA. I don't know what can set that off, or, you know, what causes a flare up technically, but it was obviously something going on, because he had 5 walks in his last 40 innings going into that game, and then walked the first 3 batters or whatever. So it's another, you know, pretty big time closer down.
You had him ranked second last week or something,
yeah,
right?
that's a curse, because I had Devin Williams second the week before. So sorry to Brian Baker, who's second this week. And I already know that's gonna, you know, he's gonna have a terrible week. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is another, I really don't know who takes over the role for the next 2 weeks. It sounds like it's just going to be a 2-week thing. But like that bullpen is really, like, Nardi has been struggling lately. Bender and Fauché have been more bad than good. I think they really like Michael Peterson. I think that might be the guy who gets the chance. Stuff-wise, certainly he has it. Command definitely does not have that yet, but some, like, you know, it's just a consistency thing with him. So yeah, I don't know. He'd at least be a fun play, a fun guy to take a chance on. But in a save only league, it's not like he's going to take Fairbanks' job. So, I guess someone you can look at for the next 2 weeks to see what happens. I'm trying to think of who else. Like, it's not going to be Lake
Tyler Picard. Phillips is maybe Tyler labeled Phillips as the closer on roster resource. I think he's really tapping into his strike. Yeah, he is. He's tapping into his strikeout potential a little bit more. He does have one save on the season and a 1.56 ERA. The problem is it's coming with way more walks. Last year, 7.7% walk rate. This year, 15.8%, while the swinging strike rate has not changed. So while I think Phillips deserves the more strikeouts, it coming with twice as many walks is exactly what you didn't want to see. So I wouldn't be buying into this. Also, on top of that, they've been using Phillips in multi-inning roles throughout the season. So I don't think he's going to be used traditionally.
That's why, like, him and Bakar kind of, like, they throw multiple innings. So I don't know. Maybe, like, John King's had a good start. Maybe they just, I don't know.
Yeah, that doesn't seem
like it. Could be someone like that. It's only going to be 2 weeks, so.
Peterson, I think, is a good play if you're so desperate. I mean, where would you rank, like, Peterson versus Varland? Because Varland just seems more obvious, but the usage is so weird. And I think Peterson, I don't know, Varland might be better. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I have Varland a little bit higher because at least there's a chance that he can get a little bit longer closer usage. Maybe even, like, because again, he was kind of splitting the role with Beeter to begin with. So if he goes on a heater here while Beeter's out, then maybe Varland can just take that role and run with it. Mm-hmm. Because it's not like, I mean, Beeter's not, he was not like pitching all that great beforehand. So they were really adamant to stick with him in the closer role. They really wanted him to make things work in the ninth, but they don't need to force that on him. So if he comes back and Varland's pitching well, Varland should remain the closer. But Fairbanks isn't going to lose his job in 2 weeks.
Right. I would have to agree there. All right. That will cover all of our transactions and injuries. Next, we'll talk about news before we talk about Rick's closer ranks. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relief pitchers. We have a few bit of notes or of news before we get into the three up, three down section. Let's start with Jeff Hoffman, who was officially removed from the Blue Jays closer role. It was sort of a long time coming. He's been struggling this year. I still think he's been really unlucky. The holy trinity of equating luck, BABIP, left on base percentage, and home run to fly ball ratio have been just about as unlucky as you can get. And I think he's going to lock back in. But Louis Varland already has two saves. I expect him. He might have had another one today.
He got a save tonight, and he struck out the side in order, the top of the press box order.
That's so, what I worried about. Like, I don't think – I think Varland and Hoffman are a little bit comparable. I think Hoffman is definitely been really unlucky this year, and Varland's maybe been a little bit lucky. I think they're both really good relievers. But I think it's like Hoffman's going to lock back in a setup role, and Varland's just going to run away with the closer role, and it's just never going to switch back. But
that might be the best case. I mean, it's obviously not good for people who drafted Hoffman, but for the Blue Jays, I mean, Hoffman's best years were with the Phillies in that fireman setup role, and the Blue Jays had, you know, they kind of were interested in getting a closer this offseason. So maybe this is their ant. They found their answer internally with Varland being the closer. Clearly has closer stuff. And then,
yeah,
once Hoffman does kind of get his feet under him, now you can start using him in, like, bigger situations earlier in the game, which is, you know, arguably just as important, the role mm-hmm. he had in Philadelphia, and, like, that role multiple teams use with some of their better relievers. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's weird because Hoffman's the guy getting paid, and he was paid to be the closer. But, like, as long as he's pitching well in an important role, I think the Blue Jays will be fine with that. And yeah, Varland's just been too good right now. So that's three saves now, dominant tonight. It's like you can't fix something, or you can't, if it's not broke, don't fix it or don't change it. Right. You know, so just keep rolling with it.
Varland definitely deserves to be rostered universally, but do you think in standard leagues that you're dropping Hoffman, or you're just holding in the hopes that maybe he gets the role back, or that they sort of split the role, that he's in sort of a high leverage relief role where he sometimes gets saves? Or do you think he's just worth dropping?
They talked about, I mean, him maybe like eventually factoring back in. I think it depends on what you're dropping for. Because look at the closer reliever landscape right now. It's like, how many interesting guys are there behind him that could potentially be the closer for, like, let's say the rest of the year, and not in a committee? There's not a ton of names. So I think I had him still in like 15 or 16th this week, because I don't think I'd be dropping Hoffman unless there's someone with significant upside who also has a chance to reclaim or claim a closer job for the rest of the season. So that's, I don't know, like him or Jacob Latz is some questions I've been getting. Mm-hmm. That's a tough one for me right now. I think I'd still hold on to Hoffman, but I'd be really mad if I didn't get Latz and he does run away with that job in Texas. So, but that's like kind of the line right now. Like I'd probably rather hold on to Hoffman than hold on to like Emilio Pagan, or definitely like Dennis Santana or Lucas Ursig. I'd rather Hoffman still.
Okay. All right. Well, sounds like he's pretty worth rostering for at least another week or two while we see.
If Varland has like one bad outing and Hoffman continues to pitch well, like that could switch immediately, you know? You never know.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll continue to keep an eye on that Blue Jays situation. In Atlanta, Raisel Iglesias is out with shoulder inflammation, and he's expected to return from the IL when first available, which should be, I think, next week. He's begun throwing, and his shoulder inflammation has subsided. So I think we could see Raisel Iglesias back very shortly. And I assume they'll just thrust him right back into the closer role, despite how good Robert Suarez has been.
Yeah, I don't think Suarez has been great, but I don't think he's like done anything to give him like make himself the closer. So I'd imagine it goes back to Iglesias when he returns, which is fine for now. I don't know if it's going to last. I don't think that means you need to automatically drop Suarez. I would probably give at least a couple weeks before I would drop Suarez once Iglesias returns.
All right. And our last bit of news involves Jeremiah Estrada, who's been out for a couple weeks with elbow tightness. He began a rehab assignment last Friday, and he could return by next week, just based on the timeline of the beginning of that rehab assignment. That'll be big for the Padres bullpen. He should factor into high leverage situations, but could see Jeremiah Estrada back next week.
Yeah, and then that's going to be tough. Like, we already have Morejon and Adam behind Miller. Bradley Rodriguez has been pitching pretty well as that like third setup guy. I don't know. I mean, I guess Estrada's velo has been looking better in his rehab. So if he's healthy, obviously he's that third guy or the fourth guy in that just ridiculously good quad of relievers they have. But yeah, I mean, Bradley's pitched pretty good this year. I don't know. It's just an embarrassment of riches, as they say, with that bullpen.
Yeah, hopefully the Padres can continue to compete with the Dodgers, with a lot of thanks being put into that Padres bullpen, because Fernando Tatis is not really doing much for them right now with zero home runs. So that will wrap up our news and notes. Let's get into our three up, three down section, where we talk about the closers rising and falling on Rick's weekly closer ranks, which you can go read over at pitcherlist.com. Like I said, they come out every single week, and Rick puts a lot of time into them, so definitely give them a read. Let's start with the risers, and Brian Baker, I think, is an obvious riser. You said you had him ranked number two on the list this week, a huge jump. I mean, everybody's struggling. I mean, outside of Mason Miller, who knows who's good anymore? But Brian Baker is getting a lot of saves. He's pitching well. He's got, I think, 7 saves on the season right now, 3.18 ERA, 28% strikeout rate. It's going very well for him. Is there anything that sort of worries you that might have him moving down the list? Because it seems like you mentioned Griffin Jacks possibly moving to the rotation. So all the competition is sort of gone. I think Garrett Clevenger is supposed to be back sort of soon. I think I missed mentioning that earlier when we talked about Edwin Ucetta.
Yeah, he's back this weekend.
That's right.
that's the thing is like, what, so if he comes, I mean, does he eat into Baker's closer role? I see, this is the thing. Brian Baker this year, his best pitch has been his changeup. He's been dominating lefties. Like, his changeup's been awesome. So I don't think it should. I think Clevinger at least gives them a lefty so they don't have to rely on Ian Seymour as much as they have been. They've been like any left-handed situation prior to the ninth inning, it's been Ian Seymour. So now at least Clevinger gives them like a better option there. So I don't think that even factors into Baker. Like, Jack's moving into the rotation obviously doesn't hurt Baker. Usetta being out for who knows how long now. So my concern is like how, like getting the ball to him, because like Sulcer and Kelly, and I guess Clevinger helps, but like Sulcer and Kelly are, they're not the best like relievers the Rays have had in the past few years. I mean, they're okay. But yeah, I think, you know, this is going to be Baker's role for the foreseeable future, and probably for, I mean, if as long as he pitches well, like he's been like, this isn't like a flash in the pan too. Like, he's been doing this since like he got traded to the Tampa Bay, and even before that in Baltimore, he was pitching pretty well. So this isn't like anything out of the blue or anything like weird that's going on. No, this is like, this guy gets a ton of swing and miss, does a pretty good job limiting hard contact. Stuff plus PLV, like, love his stuff. Just the three really good pitches. I mean, there's like, it's a kind of a, I feel like he's safe as well as has a pretty high ceiling as well, which just, you know, trying to figure out who is the second reliever. It was between him and Aroldis Chapman, really. And I don't know, Chapman's velo has been fluctuating so much. And I just like Cade Smith and Ryan Helsley and Andres Munoz behind him, like, none of those three guys have been exactly like, they haven't been right. They haven't been themselves this year. So I feel like Baker has just been quietly like the best of everyone besides Mason Miller as far as closers go. He's second or third in saves right now and still only rostered in like 40% of leagues. So I don't know what else he has to do. Is it the name? Is it just like the boring name? Is that why no one wants to pick him up, or the Rays scare people? I don't know, but he should be rostered in every league.
Yeah, what is he at right now? I'm checking Fantasy Pros.
ESPN, he's got 16% rostered in ESPN. I don't know what happens on ESPN. What's happening over on ESPN?
Not that I don't like ESPN, but I think it's like people just do drafts and then they just forget about their league. It's pretty crazy. I would always look at Yahoo, but still, Fantasy Pro says he's rostered in around 27% of leagues, which is across all platforms. So I think he's definitely, that's very under rostered for how good he's been, how many saves he has, like the outlook for his season. He's got a 19% swing strike rate, which suggests that the 28% strikeout rate is going to go up. But yeah. I think the biggest question with Baker is what happens when he faces more right-handed hitters. As you mentioned, he's been really changeup heavy this year. The slider he's thrown just 8% of the time overall, but that's going to be one of his main offerings versus right-handed hitters. And we've seen them sort of tee off against his four-seamer with a 67% ICR, and the same against the slider, 75% ICR. He's throwing sliders for strikes, but they're not getting whiffs. So my concern is, as he sees more righties moving forward, can he make that slider a legit whiff pitch, or is it something that sort of holds him back that might get crushed while the four-seamer doesn't perform as well against same-handed hitters? So that will certainly be an interesting factor to watch with Brian Baker. Our next riser is lefty Jacob Latz, who is emerging as a serious candidate for saves in Texas, where Jacob Junis is sort of being used all willy-nilly all throughout the ball game, and Jacob Latz just continues to succeed. 1.23 ERA, 25% strikeout rate, definitely a more sustainable profile than Jacob Junis. And while Cole Wynn is there with the ceiling that he has, they have not been willing to trust him in the later innings as much as we've seen from Latz.
Yeah, there's a couple things with Latz. It's the numbers this year have been great, but it's the last two games in particular where he's been 95-96 with his fastball, and obviously he got a save the last time out. And that save too, Junis pitched the eighth, Lats pitched the ninth, and Lats got the top of the order. And it wasn't even really lefty righty. Like, he got Langoliers and he got Kurtz lefty, but like, it was, I don't know. It seems to me maybe the Rangers have figured out that this is their closer, and the velo going up in the last two games. I wonder if it's like, did they talk to him and be like, hey, like, you're going to be in the bullpen for the rest of the year? Like, because it's like he had his, you know, usually when guys go to the bullpen, their velo increases, but he still had his starter velo for like most of the year. And then the last two times it's been up 3 miles per hour. And I'm like, well, that's typically what you see, you know, from a starter turn reliever. So he's kind of letting it all go for those one inning stints now. And I mean, at 95, 96, stuff is just like, his stuff's ridiculous.
Right, because the shape on that pitch is crazy already. 18 inches of vert, 1.3 Hava is crazy.
Secondaries are pretty good too. I mean, that's really, if he can stick in that 95, 96 mile per hour range, and he, like, that would, to me, that means that he should at least take over that closer role, because like, that's Jacob Junis cannot compete with that. And even like, he's got a pretty good changeup. I'm not worried about him against righties, curveball as well too. So I mean, like, yeah, I'm really excited about Lats. I just, like, if he gets the next save chance there, like, that's like, I think that puts me into like, you have to roster him. He's like a top 15 option at that point. But yeah, right now it's more of excitement and like, let's see what happens. But if he has a good week, good weekend here, then yeah, he becomes a must roster guy. Cause that stuff, like, I mean, he's like, we talk about Louis Varlin and Brian Baker and like Tanner Scott, like Lats would be right up with those guys, you know?
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that fastball makes a huge difference. Yeah. That's like up 2 to 3 miles per hour. I mean, he opened the season with a start, and he was sitting 92.5. So to be up at 96 is huge. And that makes his fastball, which is already really good at 93 miles per hour, like 94th percentile PLB. Yeah. That makes it one of the best in baseball, to be honest. Yeah. If he's throwing 96 with 18 inches of IVB and a flat attack angle and the ability to command it with three secondaries that are pretty solid, Lats becomes, yes, very interesting. And our last riser sticking in the AL West is Jack Perkins, who's gotten a pair of multi-inning saves for the A's in his last two appearances. His stuff is really good. He gets a lot of whiffs. He's throwing mid-90s, and there's just really nobody there. Obviously, you can't trust Joel Kunal in that bullpen. Mark Leiter Jr. has struggled, and Hogan Harris is precarious with an 18% walk rate. So Perkins has sort of emerged as the clear best option in that bullpen. I think the biggest change is he's throwing more strikes, which is huge for him.
Yeah, like, you know, all young relievers, or most young relievers, you know, that's typically the question mark, or it's like, how's the command? Is there consistent strike throwing? And Perkins, especially those last three outings from him, again, we're talking small samples and like just trendy, but these last three outings have been really good from him. And definitely better than his first couple outings from a stuff perspective as well. And it's resulted in two saves and a win. So there's some trust there from the A's. Obviously, he's got two saves in his last two outings. The stuff is, it's probably, I would say, I mean, yeah, it's the best stuff in that bullpen. The question is he always is throwing two innings at a time. So how does that factor into being the potential closer there? Because like, that might limit him on back-to-backs, and they might just, you know, Kotze, this A's team, they might just want to keep rotating guys out. But like, I mean, if he's available and you have a lead in the eighth inning, I think you want to go to Perkins for the last two innings at this point. And that's probably, I don't think that hurts his value. If he misses a couple saves, I don't think that hurts his value too much. Cause you're going to get a lot of strikeouts with those innings. You're going to get saves and hopefully good ratios. So yeah, I think I know Sterner and Hogan Harris have struggled there, but I think, you know, between Perkins, Sterner, and Hogan Harris, I'd be pretty comfortable with that trio in the late innings. I know Sacramento is going to make things interesting, that ballpark, but it's a stuff wise, that's a pretty good group right there that they have.
Yeah, totally would love to see Perkins used as the closer. His stuff is dope. But as you mentioned, he sort of got that Ben Brown syndrome where the team just does not want to give up on him as a starter, or at least as a multi-inning reliever. So
he's still throwing like five pitches. Yeah, it's like.
So hopefully we see that transition, sort of the same transition we saw from Mason Miller, as the team just gave up on him as a starter to keep him healthy. And then he really took off. So I would love to see that happen for Jack Perkins. And as those guys rise up the list, others have to fall to accommodate them. Let's start with Kenley Jansen, who has not been terrible this year with a 3.68 ERA and a 28% strikeout rate. But what has you dropping him down your closer ranks?
I mean, the last couple outings have been a little bit sketchier. He's allowed, I think, hits in his last five games, like with a 3-2 strikeout to walk rate. He's been fine. There were a couple games there. I think he gets amped up at certain times and throws 95, 96, and it's just like, then it disappears and it's frustrating because I don't know why I buy into it and get suckered in. The last outing wasn't great. He's just, you know, leaving sinkers over the middle of the plate at like 92 miles per hour. He'll be fine. It's hard to put him, even with like all the uncertainty. I would rather take a chance on some of these guys shooting up the list, like Varland, Baker, O'Brien, or Seawald even. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with Jansen. He's fine, but just, I don't know if that ceiling continues to shrink, I feel.
Yeah, he's throwing a lot less strikes, which is a bit concerning, he's also been really he's been really lucky too. 97% left on base rate. So that 1.36 whip he has might start biting him, but we'll see. I mean, I think Jansen's obviously still worth rostering, but
yeah,
he's getting old. He's 38. It's going to start being a little bit sketchy moving forward. Like last year, a lot of his luck was based on a sub 200 BABIP. So if he doesn't have that again, it's just going to be a little bit more precarious. We're going to see worse ratios, which we're already seeing so far this year. Our next faller is Dennis Santana of the Pittsburgh Pirates. He just got blown up last night, and that inflated his ERA. He was like under one, and now he's up to 3.29. The walks have just been out of control for him. He's still the closer in Pittsburgh, but I know you have your eyes set on somebody else.
No. Well,
I saw your tweet.
I mean, obviously I want to see Mason Montgomery in that role. But I don't think he's the first guy they go to. It's probably going to go to Soto, who, by the way, I don't know if it was this weekend. It was recently though. We saw Soto pitch the ninth and Santana pitch the eighth again. So like they're still in that committee technically, even though Santana had been getting most of the ninth inning work. So that's still kind of up in the air between Soto and Santana. And then last night was like, you know, it was a little bit unlucky, but at the same time, I feel like Santana was due for that bad luck because everything in his profile is basically like he's screaming he's due for some regression, some bad luck. And it kind of hit him last night. It was an ugly outing. It could have been even worse. The two home runs, I mean, letting up home runs to Pedro Páez. And Weatherholt's pretty good. So, but you can't be leaving that sinker over the middle of the plate to a good hitter because his sinker's down 1 or 2 miles per hour this year. You know, his stuff's not, it's below average at best right now. So, where do we go from there? That they don't really have many righties in that bullpen that they can lean on. So it's like the two lefties and Soto, Soto's not been the same guy in the second half of this year so far. So like the last 2 weeks. Montgomery's pitched the best, but he's also opening games for them and the usage is kind of weird. So I think Montgomery's definitely the best bullpen. Obviously the best stuff wise in that bullpen. And they have more lefties than righties, so I think they could be okay with a lefty in the closer role, or more trustworthy lefties. I think even you could throw Evan Sisk in there as a decent left-handed option for them. So, yeah, I think Soto or Montgomery take over that role eventually. And even if it is Soto to begin with, I think Montgomery is going to be right, you know, on his heels, because he's already, when not opening the game, Montgomery was kind of working his way into the seventh inning, being a setup guy for them. I think he's got four holds already. So, yeah, I feel like it's just a matter of time as long as his command sticks. And so far, so good, but I don't want to get too excited about Mason Montgomery because I think obviously I've been burned in the past.
Hey, man, your preseason prediction, bold prediction, was that he'd have the closer role by some point in May. And honestly, that is looking very feasible at this point. Dennis Santana has just lost all his command. And as you mentioned, the -1 mph on velocity. Yeah. Right. You need the command if you're going to have lower velocity. And you'd expect better command if the velocity is decreasing. But no, he's had an 8% strike rate decrease overall, and it's mostly on the slider, which he threw 71% strikes last year. This year, 54% strikes. That is just not going to work as your most thrown offering. And yeah, I think it was already sort of sketchy with Santana because the underlying metrics always suggested that he was a lot worse than he was last year. 2.18 ERA with a 4.23 xFIP. This year, 3.29 ERA and a 5.40 xFIP. It's just not going to work for that much longer. They really should have traded him last year. Maybe other teams are just as smart as we were, and we're like, no. We don't want Dennis Santana.
I think that was always like when we were like, why are teams not trading for Kyle Finnegan, or why aren't the Nationals trading Kyle Finnegan? It's like, they know more than what we know. And like, I was the same thing with like JoJo Romero. It's like, you know, they should have traded JoJo Romero this offseason. Why? Maybe teams know that he's like not that great for that. Yeah. I don't know. You know, it's
probably the case with Dennis Santana as well. Yeah. All right. Our last faller is Eniel De Los Santos, who'd sort of taken over the closer role for the Astros, but then they used him with like a 6-run lead on Sunday. And he just absolutely blew up, allowing 3 runs, inflating his ERA to 6.10. It's been a struggle for him this year. He's had some ups and downs. He's had some solid save opportunities, but outside of that, it's just not been great. Brian King hasn't been that supportive either. Brian Abreu still got a near 13 ERA. It's just really not great in Houston. And I dropped Eniel De Los Santos where I had him just because I just don't want to risk this, even if it means like I could get a save or two. It's just the ratios are just so scary.
Yeah, I think we just got to move on from the Astros bullpen until Hader returns. And I don't know if there's going to be anyone that's worth rostering for the next 4 weeks, 3 weeks. So, there are times where De Los Santos looks pretty good, looks interesting, and then there are times, it's just very hit or miss with him. If Bennett Souza, but I don't think he's got enough time to get things, you know, correct here and take that role for the next couple weeks. You talked about Brian Abreu, who I don't know if the last time out he was throwing 93 miles per hour.
I didn't know it could get worse.
Don't know. It's like this is like the same thing with Carlos Estevez. It's like, can we look at his arm? Like, is he okay? What is happening here? Because that's 4 miles per hour lower than where he usually is. It's unfortunate for Abreu, and this whole bullpen is. And then like their best reliever started today, and Kaiwei Tang, he's been their best reliever, and I don't know if they're moving him into the rotation or not, but.
They need
bullpen help. I know he's a sweeper. He's only a sweep. Yeah. He throws a sweeper, and like he's a one pitch guy. I don't know.
Eric Fetty makes it work. So
does he make it work?
No, he doesn't. That was the joke. Yeah. All right. Well, that will wrap up our 3 up, 3 down section. To recap, Brian Baker, Jacob Latz, and Jack Perkins were our risers, and our fallers were Kenley Jansen, Dennis Santana, and Eniel De Los Santos. Now we'll move on to our main section and talk about some guys who have changed our expectations on their usage this year as we look over the early season save plus hold leaders. But first, we're going to take another break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relief pitchers. Let's talk some save plus hold leaders. I think when we first looked at this list, we said, okay, well, this is probably about what you'd expect based on how guys have been performing this year. And you know, it's mostly just going to be the closers and the top setup men. So like Mason Miller's number two on the list. Eric Sabrowski's number one, which I think people who follow relief pitchers closely wouldn't be surprised by that. You got David Bednar, number three, Riley O'Brien, Tony Santion, Jason Adam are up there. That one's pretty surprising because Adam's only had seven appearances.
Seven appearances, seven holds, three strikeouts.
But the whiff rate is way up there. He's gonna turn it around. So it's mostly who you'd expect. I think some of the guys maybe aren't gonna hold up there. I think Lucas Erceg's probably gonna fall off a little bit as he starts to struggle, and maybe guys like Jojo Romero and Trevor McGill, as their roles sort of change, they fall down the list. But we'll see. So let's focus on some guys that, if you had told us before the season started that these guys were on at this point in the save plus hold leaderboard, we'd be surprised about. And I think the first one, the most obvious one, is Juan Murillo, who has 8 save plus holds. He's got a 1.98 ERA and a near 30% strikeout rate. He was not used like this last year at all. The Diamondbacks were very wary of using a rookie reliever in high leverage situations, but he was very clearly one of their best options in a season where the bullpen struggled mightily to find a closer. Murillo throws 100 miles per hour, and they finally let him pitch some high leverage situations, and he's been incredible.
Yeah, and we talked about him, I believe, last week as one of the breakouts this year. The changeup's been a big difference maker for him, especially because they've been trusting him against lefties, or that's how he kind of started the season, was being the lefty guy for them. And then it's like, you know, he's getting lefties, and now he's always been able to kind of, you know, get righties with his fastball and slider. So, I think if it wasn't for Paul Sewald pitching better than we had expected, he would be the closer right now in Arizona. But, I mean, we'll still take him in save plus holds leagues, and he's one of the better, you know, handcuffs for closers right now. Because I do think Sewald can prevail and be good for the rest of the season, but who knows, at his age he could get hurt or whatnot. So Murillo is a pretty good handcuff there.
Right. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see sort of what the Diamondbacks do over the next couple of years. I know AJ Puck's going to be a closer, but they still got Justin Martinez. So Murillo looks like the closer of the future, but so did Martinez. I think Murillo is probably more suited for that role, though, just because Martinez is one of those like Brusdar, Gratterall ground ball pitchers where he's not going to get you as many strikeouts as the other guys. So Murillo's looked very good thus far. Excited to see what he can continue to do in Arizona. Moving down the list, I think we have some A's guys that are pretty interesting. Hogan Harris has 7 saves plus holds so far this year, and Joel Kuhnel has 5. Kuhnel was somebody who didn't even pitch last year, so I think we would have, if somebody told us Kuhnel was going to have 5 save plus holds and 4 of those being saves in March, I think we would have said, who is Joel Kuhnel? Hogan Harris has been really good as well.
Yeah, I think, the Kuhnel one, I mean, that's out of nowhere. Like, he's only pitched one full season, and it was terrible when in 2022 with Cincinnati, and the stuff hasn't changed all that much. But, Harris is an interesting one because of the seven save plus holes that puts him up there near the top. Better swing and miss stuff this year from him. The command, though, has been atrocious. I think he's got an 18% walk rate, maybe higher. So that's where his whip's at 1.4. So it's so funny with him going into the offseason this year. I'm like, he's just like a Toby, like he's just like a, you know, your average lefty, and then he comes in the spring and he's throwing harder and he's got much better stuff, but he all of a sudden can't command it. So again, if he could just find like a medium, like a nice little, you know, place in the middle between where he was last year, where he is now, I think that would be, that's that sweet spot would be ideal for him. But I think he's, I don't know, he's again, it's hard to trust those guys in Sacramento. That's a tough home ballpark, but I think Harris is, he's definitely moving up the ranks and holds leagues. I'm just not fully, you know, a lot of people have been asking about him, and I it's hard to trust him over. It's like, I think someone asked me about like Hogan Harris or Dylan Lee. It's like, I know he's got 3 more holds than Dylan Lee, but like, come on, it's April. Go with the stuff, go with the ratios, go with the more proven asset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the added fastball velocity for Harris is definitely an interesting wrinkle there, as he's up over 1.5 miles per hour on the four seamer. It's got extra IVB, but as you mentioned, he just can't control his secondaries right now. We're seeing very low strike rates on his curveball and slider. Both of those are under 55%. He's just not even throwing his changeup anymore. So if he can start throwing strikes, he should be good, because he's the only lefty in that A's bullpen. I know Brady Basso's up right now, but he's not somebody to really trust. So I could still see him being used in high leverage situations, but yeah, he's definitely scary to roster if he's going to continue to walk so many batters. Let's continue to move down the list. And I think the Rangers bullpen, we talked about a little bit before, but Jacob Junis has been very surprising. I know you sort of called it a couple weeks ago, so there might be a little bit of sort of favor towards him after you called him, but it's very sus with Jacob Junis, because he does have a 2 ERA. He has recorded 7 save plus holds, but he's not getting any whiffs, and it's not like he's a command artist either. He's got a 7% walk rate and 11% strikeout rate, and that's just not going to hold up throughout the season. I think the Rangers have been lucky to get what they've gotten from him so far, and they should sort of cut their losses right now, because it's not going to continue with a 5% swinging strike rate.
Yeah, it's like him and Tyler Alexander getting a lot of the
right.
And it's, you know, I guess it depends on what you need. It's like, you're not gonna, I mean, Alexander has 12 strikeouts, but that's he's not a strikeout guy. But you know, Alexander's whip's a little jacked up, but Junis has a good whip. The ERA is a little bit higher. But they're both, at the end of the day, they're not big swing and miss strikeout guys, especially Junis, obviously. Better than Joe Kuno, but I it's like not somebody I feel that I need to roster at this point. There is a little bit of safety. As long as Junis is throwing strikes, like he's had a couple outings lately where he's walked some guys, and that's like, he can't afford to do that with his stuff, because he's just putting everything's in play. So if you're just leaving a lot up to the BABIP gods to make sure that you get out of that inning if you walk people. So if Junis isn't walking people, like there's something there, but he's not. There's a difference between like Tyler Rogers, who doesn't walk anyone or doesn't get any strikeouts, because he's, you know, an elite at inducing like not hard contact, so soft contact. So Junis has been good at that, but not quite on that Tyler Rogers level. So yeah, I'm not really interested in Junis, especially in saves. He was only interesting in saves leagues because he might be getting saves. There's a ton of holds options that are going to be just as good, if not better. Right. But if Lats is getting saves now, then like Junis kind of, he's a safe option if you're like in really deep leagues, but that's about it. It's not someone exciting to chase at this point.
Yeah, and you mentioned Tyler Alexander as well. 5 save plus holds on the year, a sub-1 ERA. He did have a pair of saves which were surprising. I think there were either multi-inning or ones in which like everyone pitched back days.
Yeah,
they were sort of lucky saves. And with a 5% swinging strike rate, I think the 20% strikeout rate is going to come down a lot. So while Tyler Alexander is good at inducing weak contact, 28% ICR on the season and a 51% ground ball rate, which is sort of new from him as he leans into the sinker and cutter, he's not somebody who I think is going to get many more save plus holds throughout the season. I wouldn't be surprised if the 5 he's had in this first month are more than he has the rest of the year.
Yeah, I mean, it would be probably tough to see him get double digits. So yeah, that's probably about right. Robert Garcia is on the IL now. If Lats does move into the, ends up being the closer, I guess they have Jalen Beek still, but like maybe Alexander's their top left-handed setup guy for the time being. I don't know.
But that's not inspiring.
It's not ideal. Yeah. Neither is Jalen Beek's, but yeah, I mean, there's worse relievers than Tyler Alexander, but it's just not someone to get excited about and chase after this at this point of the year.
Nope. The Rockies bullpen has looked better than in past years. We're seeing some of the young prospects finally get opportunities. I think one of those guys is Jaden Hill, who has sort of been somebody to pay attention to for quite a while, and he's actually getting more of an opportunity this year. He throws in the upper 90s with his sinker and four-seamer. The sinker's at 98, the slider's at 88. It's some interesting stuff. Obviously, he's in Coors, but he does have six save plus holds this year. The whip is off the charts, though. He walks everybody, and as a sinker pitcher, he's going to be reliant on balls in play because he doesn't get a lot of strikeouts. He also gets hit pretty hard, 50% ICR. So while Jaden Hill has had six save plus holds, I think there's better options there. And I want to get your opinion on Antonio Senzatella after that, because he doesn't have a lot of save plus holds, but he seems like the best reliever in this bullpen, which is so weird.
Yeah, I'm not that interested in Hill right now. There's nothing. I mean, a little bit of swing and miss upside, but it's just not really showing, and the walk rates aren't great. PLV does not love his stuff. When in doubt, it's the Rockies, so just avoid. Yeah, I guess Senzatella's kind of been the one Rocky reliever who is intriguing right now. The velo has increased. I that helps him a little bit. I guess the pitch mix is fine. I don't know. I can't buy into Antonio Senzatella as long as he's on the Rockies. If he gets moved, if he's still pitching well and he gets moved, maybe that's interesting. But we've seen that, like Jake Bird last year was like kind of that guy, and then he gets traded, and then he gets is even worse in New York. So doesn't always work out. But yeah, I mean, okay. So if Senzatella does, maybe he takes over the closer role because Vodnik's been struggling. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Maybe he becomes an actual viable. There's actually a viable Rockies closer.
It's really crazy though. Like you never expect to say that about any Rockies pitcher, but we've seen like Chase Dolander. He's become a legit starter to roster, and Senzatella looks like a completely different pitcher. Not like physically, but he's throwing 2 miles per hour harder with his fastball. It's got better shape to it. It's got 81st percentile PLV. And then his secondary offering, instead of being a slider or a curveball like we've seen in years past, it's a cutter that he threw 1% of the time last year. This time he's at 28%. That one's at 92. So the stuff is different. And that sort of makes you think differently. Maybe he's got a different mindset as a reliever, but you do also have to keep in mind he's had a ERA over 6.5 over the past 2 years and has never really been somebody that's trustworthy. So it's only been 8 games. He's been used as a multi-inning reliever as well. So you sort of got to have faith in the Rockies making the process change there with Senzatella, but definitely interesting to see him have so much success right now. 0.5 ERA and a 28% strikeout rate is crazy.
Yeah. New regime. I mean, they're definitely doing some things better there for sure. So yeah, it's going to make him a nice trade chip for them at the deadline, at least. But yeah, I'm slowly moving him up the ranks. I'm so a little tepid to get in the water. Yeah, with those Rockies relievers.
That is fair. The water is cold in Colorado.
That's true.
Isaac Mattson has 6 save plus holds for the Pirates. It's been all holds this year, 1.13 ERA, but he's not a big strikeout arm. He's walking double digit batters. I know last year there was a point where he was sort of getting into the closer role when David Bednar got traded and Dennis Santana hit the IL. It was like Isaac Mattson was one of the last guys left, but I think based on the underlying metrics, he's not somebody to trust, and I'd expect sort of Justin Lawrence to lock in and Mason Montgomery to pitch more high leverage situations. But if Mattson just continues to induce weak contact, which I assume that's how he's having so much success, but that's not the case. He's just been super lucky.
He just throws his four seamer, and it's a pretty good four seamer shape wise. He just like, yeah, he lives on fly balls. It's very underwhelming, but the ratios last year worked out, and the ratios this year so far have been pretty good. So it is what it is. He's not a big strikeout guy. He just, you know, I think it works with the ballpark and the situation for him. But still, it's like, I guess the holds are there. I don't love rostering him right now. If I don't have to, like, I'd rather chase some interesting swing and miss guys instead of just going with the guy who just throws fastballs up in the zone and hopes for easy fly balls, which for now it's working. But if he starts missing with those with this, his fastball command, it's going to result in a lot of loud contact and a lot of earned runs.
Mm-hmm. We have some sort of interesting names that I don't think require much attention. Justin Brule has 5 save plus holds, but he's got like twice as many walks as strikeouts, which is not going to work out. Taylor Clark is up there with 5 save plus holds as well. He's been a really good whip play over the past couple of years. This is his first year with the Diamondbacks, but it's just because he doesn't walk anybody. So he's just relying on weak contact on balls in play. And it may work out for a little bit, but probably not forever. There's guys like Cody Funderburk in Minnesota, who I think leads the club in save plus holds right now with 5. He's got a 1.74 ERA, but same amount of strikeouts as walks with a 5% swinging strike rate. So you can start to see how it's hard to look at a leaderboard like this and be like, oh, I want this guy, I want this guy, I want this guy, because they have recorded save plus holds in the past. But there's plenty of guys where it's precarious to roster them because their stuff is just not that good and they don't strike out guys. They walk too many guys. Kevin Kelly has been better than those guys. He's got 5 save plus holds for the Rays, but maybe he can move up that ladder, but hopefully they get healthier and they don't need to.
But even if they do get healthier, like we were talking about earlier, it's like, I guess when you set it comes back maybe, but I mean, if Jax goes into the rotation, then who is the right-handed setup guy in front of Baker? It's probably Kelly or Sulcer. And I think they probably like Kelly a little bit better. I know Sulcer got the save tonight. But Sulcer is more, Sulcer is he's kind of similar to Baker. It's like not as good with the fastball changeup. Kelly gives him like something different at least. Kelly's a little bit interesting. And like Funderburk is, I don't know. That Twins bullpen, it's very frustrating and I have no interest in it. I want to find someone there, but it's a grind trying to find something interesting there.
Brule had a tough
outing tonight. Even if without that, he was tough to trust anyway.
Right. Way too many walks. Ian Seymour is also in that Rays bullpen. He's got 5 save plus holds as well. He was a sort of what are they called when they start a little bit and they relieve a little bit. I don't know why that
hybrid word has,
That's not the word I'm looking for, but Thank you. Seymour was sort of a swing man last year, and I think people were sort of upset when he didn't make the rotation. And it hasn't been great in the bullpen with a 7.11 ERA, but the luck metric suggests that he's been really unlucky. I would love to see... But I'd love to see the fastball go up, because this is a guy that could follow the sort of Jacob Latz route of having increased velocity with a deep arsenal and sort of becoming something more, but that hasn't been the case so far with Ian Seymour. But he does have 4 save plus holds right now.
Yeah, he's still just throwing 91 miles per hour. I know. Just if he could get that to like 93, 94, that's a potential game changer for him. Probably best off. He's probably best off as like that long reliever or fifth/sixth starter or whatever, that swing man role. And I think once Clevinger returns, it's probably where we see him, getting multiple inning outings, either starting or out of the bullpen.
I think the last guy I want to talk about is Keaton Wynn, who's recorded 5 save plus holds. He's been one of the best relievers in the Giants bullpen. The whip has been off the charts. He's looked much different this year than in years past. I think he's leaning all the way into being a relief pitcher, which is huge for him. The fastball velocity is up a mile per hour to 96.5, and he's just leaning all the way into his splitter, throwing it 61% of the time. And while that's a volatile pitch, he's been able to throw it for strikes consistently throughout his career, and it's getting a ton of whiffs. He's got a 0.56 whip too, because he's not walking anybody, 34% strikeout rate. And I wouldn't be surprised if he at some point takes the closer role away from Ryan Walker, who's been unspectacular.
Yeah, I think that's if the Giants ever do go towards having a traditional closer, I think it's got to be Keaton Wynn. I don't think it's very close at this point. But they haven't even, I don't even know if he's like pitched in the ninth inning or in a save situation yet. It's more, you know, they've been rotating Ryan Walker and Eric Miller based on lefty righty matchups. But yeah, I mean, Wynn with that splitter can obviously get lefties out. And yeah, the fastball's been playing up way more this year. It's Keaton Wynn's been one of the best relievers in baseball this season. And, not really talked about that much because he's not getting saves and only has the five holds on the year. But yeah, he's someone who needs to be rostered in holds leagues at this point.
All right. Is there anybody else on this list you wanted to mention before we wrap things up?
Don't think so. We've talked to some of these guys on here. We've already talked about for one reason or another. So Eric Miller is on here, five holds, but again, being the top lefty in that San Francisco bullpen does give him gives him value, and he's not walking as many guys as he has in the past. He still has a high walk rate.
Yeah, it's at 13%.
It's like a little bit better than it's been, and the strikeout rate's at least better. But yeah, he's definitely that fastball. He doesn't know fastball command, so you just got to deal with that if you want to roster him. But yeah, there's strikeouts and saves/holds to be had with Eric Miller. But yeah, there's not. I think everyone else we've kind of talked about in that range.
All right. Well, that will do it for this episode of In the Pen. Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your socials and anything else you're working on?
Yeah, you can find me on socials at I Am Rick Graham. As always, every week we're working on, you know, or every day putting out an RP streamer article, RP roundup. And now Tuesdays will be my reliever ranks. So Tuesday nights, expect to see some new reliever rankings, saves, holds, and save plus holds.
All right. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler. You can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. Follow me on socials for daily SP streamers, as well as breakdowns of every single start. And you can find more of my work over at Baseball HQ, where I do playing time analysis for the Giants, A's, and Diamondbacks. And you can also listen to me 4 days a week on the First Pitch podcast. But that will do it for this episode 158 of the In the Pen podcast. We'll talk to you all next week.